Okay, onward. Onward with our Monday night coronavirus report. And there continue to be, it's the number one story, continues to generate statistics the world around that are not forgettable, not easily. U.S. case tally has now climbed over 4.2 million cases after a fifth straight day of over 1,000 deaths per day. Remember the bat lady scientist at Wuhan at the lab there, the one who liked to work with bats and viruses therein? She said there's absolutely no way the novel coronavirus originated in her laboratory. They got that story up. These are all headlines you can read. Texas deaths jump 12% after the state changes how it counts them. You have to figure that one out. Let's see. Oh, an intensive care unit, ICU, doctor at Baltimore's Mercy Medical Center has died from coronavirus. So we've lost another frontline healthcare worker. It goes on. Henry, welcome back. How was your weekend? Did you play golf? Did you write to Donald Trump? What'd you do? Anything important?
I confirmed my boots on the ground report.
Oh, good for you. So, all right.
Well, let's put it this way. The data that came out over the weekend was consistent with my boots on the ground report. Yeah, I don't know if it quite proved it yet. But, there's quite a bit going on. All three of your stories were in the news. They all take a little bit of a different update. It's not surprising that the virus is in the news because, like they said, 1,000 people die every day. It's probably going to go up. There's some news about possibly flattening a little bit for the ones that are giving the highest levels. I did see that big jump in Texas. So, I mean, they reported like 600 deaths today. So, 675 actually. So they did get above 1,000 today, but that was, sounds like a one-time change the way they counted. Their deaths always did look a little bit on the low side. And,
what they've done in Texas, Hispanic Texans, citizens, are overrepresented in the state's updated fatality count, making up 47% of the deaths, but only 40% of the state's total population. So they did something here. Let me see what they've done here. After months of undercounting coronavirus deaths, Texas' formal tally of COVID-19 fatalities grew by more than 600 on Monday after state health officials changed their method of reporting. The revised count indicates that more than 12% of the state's death tally was unreported by state health officials before Monday. So the State Department of Health is now counting deaths marked on death certificates as caused by COVID-19. Previously, the state relied on local and regional public health departments to verify and report deaths. So it seems to have loosened up a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think the CDC always did say if it says COVID on the death certificate, it would go in the probable category because they hadn't actually tested them to see if they were.
Right.
That would usually be done by the coroner, or whoever's doing the death certificate.
Well, that raises the question: how many postmortem tests are even being run? If it says COVID on the death certificate, why?
And I mean, the rules were, I don't know, they're changing them. I'm not sure they changed. I'm pretty sure the rules were always the same, whether you combine them or not. The CDC said to combine them. They said that a month or two ago. And the way the states report them, you can kind of get a sense that some are and some aren't. And then some are kind of dividing up and saying, they might have died, they might have been COVID positive, but we need a physician to say that the virus caused the death. I mean, that's what they do in Russia. They get a very, very low number because they get doctors say, well, you know, it's just a coincidence. You know, they didn't die from COVID. They just happened to have COVID. And they died from something
COVID.
Else.
All right.
Right. But it's nonsense stuff. I mean, they don't know how COVID kills people yet. You know, he died of a heart attack. And they're, well, you know, it causes heart attacks. Well, we don't count that. We only count pneumonia.
What did they say last week, Henry? 40% of survivors are suspected of having possibly long-term heart damage. 40%, some high number.
Heart or lung. There's all kind of issues with the virus. I just heard another story of a healthcare worker who had the virus, you know, was positive a couple of months ago, then tested negative, went back to work, and all of a sudden he got hit again and he's paralyzed from the waist down. And, you know, they say, well, we're not sure if that was the old one or that was a new one or whatever. But it raises concerns that one initial infection, especially if it's mild or especially if the virus changes, may not really offer protection for a second infection. And there's a potential for this enhancement type of effect. And so the second time is actually worse than the first time, quite a bit worse than the first time. And that is a concern. I mean, that's a concern for the virus in general. That's a concern for the vaccines in general. And, you know, if you get the vaccine's not working as well as it could, and you got kind of an okay response, that might set you up for a more severe response when you actually get infected a second time or when you get infected the first time. You know, so there's a lot of uncertainty about the virus on almost every level. I'll take the stories kind of the ones you mentioned. As far as China and the virus in the lab story, this was one of the labs in Wuhan that actually does a lot of the work with virus, looking at you know, what kind of viruses they can get. They usually go to bat caves and get them. This lab actually was working with a U.S. lab, and like I said, that's the best way to get the best information on what's going on in China is actually to collaborate with them, but Trump withdrew the funding from the lab to prevent them from collaborating further. So, I mean, the guy's a total moron. You know, you've got to set up there, you got access to the lab, you're finding out what China's doing, and he decides it's a China virus, so we're going to cut off funding to the U.S. lab that's doing work on how these viruses arise and how they evolve. It's utter, you know, it's worse than stupidity. You know, it's a dangerous wacko that has no idea what he's doing, abuses his power, and creates more problems. But in any event, unfortunately, one's got the nuclear football, and he's getting ready to declare martial law. But, you know, apart from that, let's stick to the pandemic here. As far as the pandemic's concerned, the lab went and checked all their records to make sure that they had never had any virus that was close to the one that's causing the disease. They did have one that was 96% identical, but that was isolated in 2013, and you couldn't get from that one to the one that's circulating through just evolution. It would take, you know, 20 to 200 years or something to approach getting something this evolved this far away. You're going to make up for that extra 4%. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the argument was. She was worried that maybe somehow it was in one of the samples they had, and maybe somebody got infected or something. It's negative data. It's hard to prove a negative, but they basically tested everybody in the lab. Nobody in the lab was infected, or had antibodies. I guess theoretically somebody could have been infected a year ago and left the lab and didn't get tested, more recently. You can find excuses, but they did look. They looked at the people in the lab. They looked at all the sequences they had. And everything came up negative. They didn't have any evidence that virus was ever in their lab. And the reports on that actually didn't say anything about a more recent virus, which actually was closer. It was in a totally different lab. They didn't have anything to do with Wuhan. And did get the virus in a from a bat, another horseshoe bat, but they get subdivided. This one was predominantly found in Malaysia and on the Malaysian Peninsula, but it was in Yunnan province also, but it was close to the Thailand border.
Right.
And it was like 1% closer. It was, I think it was closer to 97% identical, but it was still 3% away. It kind of says that virus is circulating on a couple different, closely related but different species of horseshoe bats. Both of these were in southern China, but there's a chance that the virus was in other locations and somehow infected somebody that ended up infecting a bunch of people in Wuhan. So it's negative data. So she came out and made a statement that, they've looked, they don't have any evidence. And I think there's still supposed to be a further investigation. It's still not an explanation from exactly where the virus started. The seafood market is not as high a suspect anymore because some of the earlier cases that they didn't link it to the market. And it's very possible that, somebody just infected people at the market, but that wasn't really the source. They couldn't find it in any of the products. They could just find it on surfaces. And it's possible that, somebody was infected and they infected somebody at the market. It was a person that infected them, not something that they were selling. And so that's kind of the latest update in that area. The another piece of news, which goes along with my boots on the ground story, so I'll go through that one first, and then kind of give you the evidence on the boots on the ground being a correct observation. And that was the Florida Marlins the Miami Marlins. Whatever, the Miami baseball team. Miami Marlins. We're supposed to play a game today. They didn't. The reason they didn't play is they've got 14 positives on the team. I think a couple were coaches, and most of them were players. Mm-hmm. And they decided that maybe they should take a break in the action. So I think they're not playing today. I think they're not playing for a couple of days.
And they couldn't
what?
Couldn't they just? I mean, I think a lot of these guys would just as soon try to play through it. That's just the way athletes are.
Oh, please, yeah, you're right.
That's what they think.
The whole league.
Now, right.
I think the reason they had so many is because they test every day or every other day. And so the fact this team's got 14 players, season hasn't really started. I think this was their opening game they were supposed to do today. And admittedly, they're in Miami, so that's where you're supposed to go back to school in a couple of weeks.
Right.
So the fact that this team has 14 players, they had to cancel their game. They may end up canceling the entire season because, like I said, this is the first game of the season. And they got half the team infected. And it's very difficult because they actually do have, you know, tests that they do on site and they get the results almost immediately. So they're not in the position mm-hmm. of the general public where they have to wait in line forever, get a sample
right.
and
well, it's 11
wait
players
for results
and two coaches.
7-10 days.
So
yeah. And so they've got this state of the art testing. And I think many of the sports teams have this. So they literally take the swab and they stick it in a tube and switch it around, and in an hour or two, they get the result. And, you know, if Trump wants to go ahead and open up the schools to get the economy back, well, why don't schools have that type of testing? You know, the schools are kind of doing the same thing that the general public's doing. And they mm-hmm. they may have some type of arrangement, but I'm not sure. You know, the idea that they might have some type of arrangement was the boots on the ground. You know, I reported last week that there was this
Tell
big
us again.
Spike in cases.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Basically, I was looking at Allegheny County. Allegheny County was the main county for Pittsburgh. You know, just about everything in, I think all of Allegheny County is definitely the Pittsburgh metropolitan area. It's right in the middle of Allegheny County. Some of the suburbs kind of hit adjacent counties, but basically if you're going to represent metropolitan Pittsburgh in any county, it's Allegheny County. And I kind of monitor because I'm in Pittsburgh in Allegheny County, and they divided it up, you know, so that there's, I don't know, it's probably divided up into something like 100 different neighborhoods. It's not by zip code, it's just by area. Some of the areas, you know, further away from the center of the city are fairly large. Some of the mm-hmm. ones in the city are very small. And
right.
they're, you know, so they're probably similar population-wise for each of these. And so I kind of monitor the ones in the, you know, to the north of the city, because that's where I am. And it really covers the area where I am as well as the adjacent suburban school districts. And I kind of look at this side of Pittsburgh, pretty much the north side of Pittsburgh also. And I've been monitoring them daily. I mean, they update it every day. And they don't really have a table that you can go to, but they have an interactive map. So you basically okay. can slide your cursor over it, and each area that you touch, it pops up and it tells you how many positives, how many, you know, mm-hmm. how many deaths, what the percent, you know, the number per 100,000 people,
right.
so you can compare to other ones. And I've been tallying it on a daily basis. I've been doing that for about a month or so. And then on Friday, and normally what happens is if there's activity, they'll go up one or two in the day, you know, and sometimes they won't go up at all, so they might only go up two or three in the week. And, but it gradually goes up. And, I think there's over 5,000 cases in the Allegheny County. And, then on, I think it was Friday, I took a look and there were these big jumps, you know, the school district that I'm in, basically has about five different areas that feeds into it. The two largest ones exclusively go into the school district. And each one of them had about a 10-case jump. And if you added all of them up, the school district, jumped 30 cases just in one day. And that's a dramatic jump. And it was repeated in the areas kind of the north of the city, which pretty much feed into the same school districts that would be in the same sports conferences that would basically be on the same schedule. And they'd all have, you know, I think they all probably started July 13th for the first day of practice. And my boots on the ground was me taking a look and seeing this big sign that went up. I mean, there are a bunch of signs went up on all the doors that basically said, wear a mask and keep 6 foot distance. And then there was a big sign that went out in front of the athletic entrance, and it said, report to the turf field, to sign in and do a temperature check. And when I saw that temperature check, I thought, well, you know, I know there's cases, you know, I'd already heard about other cases, you know, word kind of travels, you kind of hear who's infected, you kind of know who they are.
How were you, Henry, I mean, how were you dressed when you were out lurking? How did you hide yourself? What was your camouflage?
You really don't have, well, I look like a jogger. I had shorts and a t-shirt.
Ah, all right.
And I went to the track and jogged. So I didn't really look out of place. And
I got it.
It wasn't that hard. I kind of, you know, used the
But how many joggers wear Sherlock Holmes hats? That's the other question. Not many.
No, I actually had a little pirate hat on, so I keep the sun out of my eyes. But basically, okay. I would blend right in. I would blend in because I've been doing this for a while. Uh-huh. And so, you know, all the maintenance guys waved to me and all the teachers. I mean, I had six kids and they all went through that high school. So they all know who I am. So anyway, and they did play sports. And so all this, everybody there knows who I am. So it's not, didn't have to wear a disguise. And the plaque was right out there on the sidewalk by the road. Anybody driving mm-hmm. through the campus would see that. I mean, anybody mm-hmm. that was coming to drop their kids off would see it. And it was there to be seen. That's how they knew they were supposed to report to the turf field to sign in and do a fever check. And it was in big letters. I got a picture. I'll send it to you. It wasn't really hard to figure out what was going on. And it actually mm-hmm. said in the paper, I was double checking because I knew I took the picture on July 13th. And I did see an announcement that said that they actually pushed it back a little bit. I think they were supposed to start July 1st. And because of COVID, they moved it back. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's because they had to set up some type of testing regimen. And so I was suspecting that the reason they all went up on the same day mm-hmm. is possibly because they were all tested on the same day. And they might have even had some type of contract that this company is actually going to go ahead and run the tests and get the tests, you know, back to them in a timely manner, because they couldn't afford to wait for, you know, a week to 10 days to get the results and try to figure out what they're supposed to be doing with all these players that mm-hmm. maybe have a temperature. If they have a temperature, you know, they shouldn't be playing. But if, you know, if they don't have COVID and the temperature goes away in a day, it's not a problem. If they do have COVID, then they got to quarantine. So I wouldn't be surprised if the school districts have a contract. I wouldn't be surprised if all the school districts in a given conference have the same contract. So they all start July 13th and they all collect their samples for anybody that had a fever, and they get the results a few days later. So the spike that happened on Friday was not repeated over the weekend, and it was not repeated today. So everything kind of returned to normal. I mean, the numbers kept going up, but they weren't going up 10 at a time. They were going up one or two at a time. So it was a big spike. It involved multiple school districts, and the results were all reported on the same day. So I think that was testing of the athletes, the timing of it was about right for them to collect the samples, get the results, mm-hmm. get it all tabulated, and then get it reported to the state department, the county's Department of Health, and then they released that in the Allegheny update that then shows up on the state report also. And so I'm pretty confident that that's what this was. And so, you know, I heard some people saying, oh, they're going to start school and they get one positive and they're going to shut school down. And I don't think that's happening. I think they went and they just tested the athletes. It's only the athletes that actually are going to be playing in the fall and uh-huh. practicing, three or four weeks before the start of school. And Fox Chapel got 30 positives. And the other schools had similar numbers. So these high schools, and this was probably just the high school. I don't know. Maybe middle schools do something. I don't even remember anymore. The kids went to school, how much they did preschool and middle mm-hmm. school. But they definitely do it at high school. They definitely started July 13th. So the results over the weekend are consistent with this big jump being some type of test that was done. And all of them went up the same time. They were reported over just that one day period. And right. then after that, they returned back to kind of the normal steady increases. So I am interpreting that to indicate that this virus is widespread. And it's is on day one that they start school, since they have more than just athletes that are playing in the fall, you know, they'll literally have dozens of positives from the day they walk in the door and do a fever check. And I don't know whether they're going to do a fever check for everybody coming in the door. I mean, I actually didn't pay attention to how they were doing the checks. I mean, most of them, if you go into a hospital, they just have, you know, the thermometer that they hold it up, you know, by your forehead. It doesn't touch anything, and they just kind of record it instantly. And I suspect they're going to do that when the kids start school, and I suspect they'll get positive. And whether they'll offer a test or whether they'll tell them to get tested, I'm not sure. I think they might do whatever they did with the student athlete, and they might have some type of contract that they're going to go ahead and find out who's got a temperature, get them tested, and find out how many of those with the temperature actually have the virus. And
with this quick turnaround, it'll help.
Yeah. Well, it'll help let them know that there's no way they're going to have a fall season, and there's no way they're going to have fall
sports. That's what
sport.
I'm saying. It'll help. It won't drag the uncertainty.
Right, right, right. It'll make a reason. It'll make it easier to determine exactly what the reality is, and I can tell you what the reality is, at least here in Pittsburgh for sure. There's a lot of virus out there, and a lot of people are kind of ignoring it. Some people are going to the doctor. That's why, you know, they get 100 or 200 cases a day in the county, and why, you know, Pennsylvania is getting close to 1,000 cases a day. And so the virus is out there, and,
virus,
you know,
is
the
everywhere.
Yeah, the idea that the kids can go back to school and it's not going to be a problem is just a fantasy. I mean, there's plenty of virus. Put them all in a school together and there's going to be plenty more virus. And it's just going to explode. And the kids might not, you know, go to the ICU as often as their parents or grandparents, but they're going to take the virus home and their parents mm-hmm. and grandparents are going to get infected. And then 2 or 3 weeks, you know, after the start of school, all of a sudden there'll be more patients showing up, and they'll be older, and they will go to the hospital, and they will end up in the ICU. And exactly what it's going to do to the children, you know, isn't at all clear, because they haven't really done a real study of asymptomatic, you know, and look and see if there's damage to them, because they're not testing asymptomatic. Yeah, I mean, asymptomatic can't get tested. Mild cases can't get tested most of the places. Even those with symptoms, but not all three of them, you know, can't get tested. And those with symptoms and get tested end up waiting 7 to 10 days for the results. And so it's kind of after the fact. But the point is that the country is not ready to go back to school. The country's not ready to go back to work. They don't really have testing that can be done on site, get a result in in a matter of minutes, and figure out who in their workforce, or who in their student body, or who in their teachers, or who in the maintenance workers are actually infected and should quarantine. And how many people are left that are infected, and whether they can, I mean, I remember with swine flu, once they hit around 10 or 15%, it was lights out. I mean, there weren't enough teachers to teach. You couldn't get the substitutes, because they were already substituting for they don't have that many substitutes. There were 15% of the workforce called in sick, that they've got enough substitutes to do 15% across the board for the whole school district or the whole metropolitan area. So I think that this boots on the ground from last week is an indication that it's going to be a total disaster as far as opening up schools. And, that's going to start in a couple of weeks, and it's going to continue for 2 or 3 more weeks. I mean, once it starts, it'll start like in the middle of August. It'll go through like the middle of September, or at least the beginning of September. And these will just go bing, 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 bing. This school opens, this school opens, this school opens up. This has got, here's a spike, there's a spike everywhere, it's a spike. And so it's just absurd. And the idea, the reason I brought this up after the sports team, it's the sports team's got state of the art. I mean, they're getting their results within, you know, minutes or half an hour or something. And they're testing like every day or every other day. And that didn't work for the sports team, and it didn't work for the president. His security advisor.
He lost his chief security advisor, national security.
Now, which
did
is
you
worse?
See about Herman Cain?
No, I haven't heard of him.
He's been infected for a month. He's still in the hospital.
Yeah, I believe that. I mean, once you get to be 60, 70 years old, you get this virus and you're symptomatic and you go in the hospital and you go in the ICU, you don't come out right away. if you come out, it definitely is tougher on an older population. And that's not a surprise. No. I mean, and for this national security guy, you know, they got lots of pictures of him sitting at banquets, going to see heads of state, no mask. And it's going to be pretty soon, it's going to be just
Trump.
Like the borders. It's going to be just like the borders. They don't want Americans come out, going into Mexico or going into Canada or going into Europe. They're not going to let the politicians go into meetings because they don't wear masks and they are cavalier and they get infected. And they get infected at a high rate. And then they go and expose everybody else that has these, you know, lunches or meetings or whatever. They're in close contact. And now they're going to look at all the pictures and all the people that he met with, none of which was he wearing a mask. And, you know, these guys are supposed to be tested, you know, every day, every other day. This guy, he was symptomatic. Mm-hmm. And what's worse, the fact that he's symptomatic or the fact that they asked Trump, well, when did you have contact with him? And usually with national security, you kind of meet with them daily.
I'm beginning to think
I can't remember. It was several days ago. I don't know, four or five days ago.
That's exactly right. What's going to happen.
No, yeah. That's what did happen. That's what, yeah. That was his answer. Trump
but
was asked when
with
he
him
last saw
standard
NASA security.
Dodge and duck.
And he says 4 to 5 days ago. I don't think he was lying. He doesn't see him. He gets all his information from sitting around watching TV and reading Twitter. That's his information source. He doesn't go to NASA security and find out what's happening in the real world. He's got this la-la land where he gets little bits and pieces of conspiracy nonsense. You know, they can tell him how many people died in 10 years from a swimming pool. You know, that's the type of information he gets for infectious disease. Oh, yeah, 30,000 people died from pool deaths over a 10-year period. You know, why are they worried that we've lost 200,000? What's the big deal? You know, I mean, it's more than we lost in World War One, but is it more than we lost in World War Two? Was it more than we lost in the Civil War? So how bad can it be?
Do you know how many we lost in the Civil War? Henry, you do know. I mean, most people do. Over 660,000 dead in the Civil War.
We got a shot at it. We got a shot at it. Wait until the fall wave hits and see how shocking 600,000 dead is.
100 days until the election. 100 days.
That is counting down. So, in any event, there wasn't any briefing today. Trump's trying to, you know, kind of ignore it. But you know what got his attention?
What?
The virus is starting to affect the red states. It's infecting our people.
Uh-huh.
And when he heard about our people, he thought, well, maybe he should take a look at this. You know, I thought it was just, people, minorities and Democrats, you know. It's affecting Republicans, people that normally vote, you know, over 65. So anyway, the light bulbs kind of went on actually, they didn't just say it's our people. They said, well, we're expecting outbreaks in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Minnesota and this in Wisconsin, this might be a problem.
Might be.
And so he kind of perked up on that. But you know, today he went to North Carolina. I think there were vaccine manufacturer, so you could say, oh, it's coming along. We're going to have it. Nothing to worry about. This is going to be ready soon.
This is worse than Nero.
Well, he thinks people believe him. He thinks he can talk the virus down. He thinks he can go and just make up his stories and either the virus will believe him, or enough people will believe him, and they'll talk about how many people died in a swimming pool, that accident. So it's crazy, and that's the reason that the top four countries are the U.S., Brazil, Russia, and India. I mean, they're all run by guys who think they can talk the virus out. They think that only they can fix it. They don't pay any attention to the advice they get. they figure they know what's going on here. They're, you know, they're, right. they're, doctors, they're, public health, infectious disease specialists, and they can figure this out. And this is the little flu, you know, as they say in, Brazil. So in any event, you know, Trump is, trying to ignore it. He's realizing that the polls say they can't, although he says he's got internal polls and, you know, it's really not that bad. You know, they can pull this out. These other polls are, you know, they just don't have the right sampling, the number, they don't have enough, they don't ask enough Republicans, and it's really not as bad as the polls say, and there's still time. And, but the point is that, the virus is moving right along. And,
doing everything you said it would.
Kind of ironically, what's really going to tip over the apple cart, it's going to be the start of school. Some of these schools are going to
start next week, I think.
Right.
And then next week.
You know, it depends where it is. I think in the South, I thought it was like the 10th or so. You know, it's not right on the first. It's
two weeks.
A weekend or something. Yeah. Yeah. A couple of weeks. There's probably a little variation. I think a few schools actually did start already and they've already had problems. And, you know, very, very small number. And I think they might have even been private schools, but they did try to get the ball rolling and, it didn't roll very far. And, that's exactly what's going to happen. Is that kids are going to go to school. It's going to take, you know, a month to figure out this isn't working. In that month, there's going to be plenty of kids that get infected. It's going to be plenty of parents that get infected. And then they'll say, well, you know, maybe we should go back to online only. And, you know, look for the spring. Now,
But see, here's Fauci saying that this isn't now, it's an indigenous endemic virus. And how is that going to generate any confidence that we'll be able to go back to normal schooling for a couple of years?
Well,
even?
You're not.
Who knows?
well, who was it? Google, I think, told its employees that don't expect to go back to work, you know, away from, you know, virtual until July of next year. So they're already in the second half of 2021, and that might even be early. I don't know. There's a guarantee it's going to be under control at that point because. I mean, the vaccines that Trump is, you know, betting the farm on now, he's got to think that, you know, if we don't have a vaccine, he can convince everybody that we will. Yeah. You know, and right now, the phase three started on two vaccines today. So vaccines were in the news, started phase three trials, except I believe both of them require two shots.
And, is that Russia?
As I mentioned, no. One's Moderna, and the other one's Pfizer, I think. So there's two in the U.S. are starting today. You know, that was kind of on the news. But Moderna, I know, requires two. And Pfizer, I'm virtually positive, also requires two shots. They're both similar. I think they both are, RNA is carried in by a virus for the spike protein, and then they make the spike protein from the RNA, and then the immune response is against the virus with the spike protein on it. And I think they're both adenovirus vaccine, and two shots is a problem. It's a problem because they're going to be administering this during the pandemic.
Getting
vaccinated ahead of the season.
What happens if they vaccinate someone who's asymptomatic but carrying a fairly heavy viral load? What's that going to do?
Yeah, or you get infected between shots while you're waiting for the booster.
That's
so,
right.
So, but both of those are non-ideal situations. And they may be even less ideal with a virus that seems to be able to be enhanced. And if the there's all kinds of
These viruses are not being traditionally tested and evaluated for safety. They're just not. They're rolling them out. There's a big rush. And I get that. I understand why. But how, this is not putting people at some risk. We don't know what the ultimate outcome is going to be.
They're not really, I mean, they're doing the a phase one and a phase two kind of in the normal time frame. I mean, the one thing they're doing to speed it up is they're basically making the vaccines, so, you know, without waiting for approval so that when they get approval, they won't have a delay that now they got to scale up and make the vaccine. So the vaccines are being made now.
I understand.
Normally, companies don't do it because, you know, there's no guarantee. And
well,
they're not
Moderna
gonna make a lot
was
of
given almost half a billion
money.
Dollars already
right,
to go ahead
right,
and produce.
Right. So the government's putting the bill. So the companies aren't risking anything by making the vaccine on a product that hasn't been approved yet. And so that's the main thing, the speeding things up. The rest is, I mean, some of these kind of already had a mechanism, you know, that they had already done some experimenting on this particular delivery system, and all they had to do is switch what RNA they stick in there. So, you know, as soon as they had the sequence in January, they could figure what RNA they're sticking in there. And then they just had to go and slap that into a system that they already had. So,
right.
And why? Because if you remember, with the swine flu vaccine, it was kind of on the same time frame that the virus kind of started in the spring, and then it kind of got going towards the end of the spring, and then it lost all its competition because flu season was over. But it didn't really go away. It kind of persisted through the summer, although at a little bit lower level. And the U.S. went and made a vaccine, and it was ready by, I think, December. It went into people's arms in December.
Uh-huh.
And it might even start at the end of November. And it was the same time frame, and it was somewhat similar in the sense that for the flu vaccines, you know, they change it regularly, and they already have the vehicle for bringing it. I mean, when you get a flu vaccine, you're not really getting the virus that's circulating. All you get is the H and the N from that virus. The rest of the virus is a virus that was isolated in Puerto Rico back in 1938, I think. So the virus has been around for, you know, almost a century now. And and it's all set up so that they know they can isolate it. They mix the new virus with the old virus and pick up the reassortants that only have those two genes from the new virus and six genes from the old virus. And then they've worked with that virus, the old virus, and they know it grows well and they can get, you know, good quantities. And
How does it grow? Is this a self-replicating virus at this point? How does it grow?
Are we talking about flu? Are we talking about this
flu.
Vaccine?
Flu.
Yeah, it grows. You can either grow it in eggs or you can grow it in cell lines. You don't have to kill a whole bunch of African green monkeys to get it to grow. You use the cell line.
So it's not a problem to grow it in a medium. Okay. It grows.
No, it grows. And it's the same thing with the new virus, with the new vaccine. The new vaccine is taking adenovirus. and they're putting in the spike protein into the adenovirus genome. It's just a package,
kind of
you know.
So, it's a novel approach, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, what's different on this is they aren't actually putting in the virus, and they're not actually putting in a protein. They're actually putting in the RNA that encodes the protein, and then the virus goes and it replicates in the person. It's a mild cold virus, but it's got this spike protein on it, and then the host sees a virus and they attack the spike protein and make antibodies to it. So then when they have the real virus, they'll already have antibodies made to the spike protein.
Okay. So, all right. Here we go.
So we'll see what the numbers look like tomorrow. I mean, this was the weekend stuff, but it still got close to 1,000 deaths each day.
Yeah.
And we'll be back on pace with a regular report tomorrow and show you where the hot spots are, and we'll go from there.
All right. Thank you, Henry. See you tomorrow.
Okay. Good talk.
Right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Good night. Dr. Henry Nyman, and we will be back with you in 21 hours. Watch how fast it goes by. Be right back.